Welcome to Season 3 of Wild Speculation. I'm Andrew Rising, and I will be your guide on this journey through the strange, wonderful, and sometimes disturbing worlds of speculative fiction. We have explored the worlds of fairy tales and mythology several times on this podcast so far, but each time it has been about recontextualizing, reimagining, or adding on to an existing story. Today, our story will be an original fairy tale, inspired by the folklore surrounding a strange and seemingly supernatural phenomenon that might have actually been based in reality, Will-o'-the-Wisps. So sit back, let your mind and heart wander to the realm of the Fae, and enjoy. A Trickster's Friendship. When walking in the forest, have a care, though fruits and flowers fill you with delight. For clever sprites and boggles linger there, and fae hate most the one who's impolite. So thank the folk for every flower picked, each berry plucked or stick retrieved for fire. Speak not your name, lest by it you be tricked, and ask not theirs, or you will bring their ire. And if a fairy to your eye appears, then offers you a compact, seeming grand. Refuse, no matter what fills you with fears. In trade, the folk have every upper hand. But ware the trickster with his wisps, above all, lest dazzled in his marshes you do fall. Since she was 4 years old, Enora had been going to the forest with her mother, Rosen, to gather wood for the fire. And every time they went, her mother recited this warning rhyme. By the time she was 5, Enora could say it along with Rosen. Still, whenever Enora left their little hut, her mother repeated the warning. Though Enora grew tired of her mother's recitations over the years, she always followed the advice of the poem, except for once when she was 6. Rosen was gathering berries in the woods. Enora was helping, though the majority of the berries she picked ended up in her mouth.
"Nora, stop eating the berries. You will get a stomach ache. Either put the berries in the basket or go play, but stay close and heed the warnings of the rhyme."
Enora didn't want to pick berries if she couldn't eat them, so she started to play. She tried to keep her mother's warning in mind, but first a shiny rock, then an excellent stick, and finally a toad hopping over tree roots led her further and further away from Rosen. All thoughts of staying close and minding the rhyme were far from Enora's mind by the time she noticed the floating ball of blue light. By the light of day, it was just a dim flicker, barely brighter than the forest shade. Yet Enora was transfixed by the light. She reached out and tried to grab it, but it pulled away from her. Laughing, she chased it deeper into the forest, just as she had the hopping toad. After a while, Enora began to feel like something was holding on to her legs, preventing her from taking another step.
"Wait! Come back!" she called to the light.
The light bobbed back toward her, but remained frustratingly out of reach.
"May I touch you?"
she asked, before remembering her manners and adding,
"Please?"
A pleasant voice that seemed to be inside her head said,
"I don't know. I usually only let my friends touch me." "I can be your friend."
"Really? How can we be friends if I don't know your name?" Enora hesitated as the warnings of the rhyme came back to her.
"I'm not opposed to tell my name to fairies."
"Oh, it'll be okay. Fairies only have power over you if they have your full name. Just give me your first name, like you would a friend."
"Oh, okay. My first name is Enora, but my ma and da call me Nora, except when they're mad at me."
"It's nice to meet you, Nora." The small blue flame alighted on Enora's little hand. It was pleasantly warm, not hot like the cook fire at home. As she held the light, she considered the issue of names.
I'm not opposed to ask for a fairy's name, but do you have a first name, a friend name, that you can give me if we're gonna be friends?
That's a good question. Humans usually call me Will or Jack, but I do have another name, a friend name, as you said, that I could share with you. Very few humans know this name.
Ooh, what is it?
I can't give it to you for free, little Nora. I am a fairy. There must always be an exchange.
But I thought making deals with fairies was bad.
It can be dangerous, but I won't hurt or endanger you. I will trade you my friend name for...
the color of your hair. How can you take that?
Tell me we have a deal and I'll show you.
Deal.
Enora watched in amazement as the blue flame in her hand shifted to purple, then to bright red, a red that looked just like the color of her hair. Except, she held a strand of her hair in front of her face. It was now white, white as a fresh snowfall. Even the elders in the village had more color in their hair than she did now.
Wow. Will my hair be white now forever?
Enora looked at the now red flame on her palm.
Yes, and I will have one red wisp. Thank you.
Enora looked at her hair again. It was strange, weird, but she kind of liked it.
Okay, well, we made a deal. What's your name?
You can call me Puck, my little friend.
It's nice to meet you, Puck. But aren't you littler than me? You can fit on my...
Enora! What on earth are you doing? And what happened to your hair?
Her mother had grabbed her by the arms and was pulling her up.
I was just making a new friend. He's really...
I told you to stay close and to mind the words of the rhyme. And where do I find you? Waist deep in mud, in Will of the Wisps marsh.
Enora looked down and was surprised to discover that she was covered in mud from the waist down.
But I...
No, Enora, there is no excuse for this. I have told you of the dangers of fairies hundreds of times. But I turn my back for a moment, and you wander off to the most dangerous place in the forest. I've told you over and over carelessness can cost you. And now you've lost the beautiful red of your hair, and gotten off lightly, too. There have been little girls who have come into the forest, made deals with the Fae, and wandered out as old women days later.
Rosen marched Enora out of the forest, scolding her the whole way. But looking over her shoulder, Enora saw the little red flame had been joined by another blue flame. They were like two eyes watching her leave. After the incident in the swamp and a week of not being allowed to leave the hut, Enora always followed the rules of the rhyme perfectly. She was polite to the fair folk, never accepted any deals they tried to make with her, and never went back to the marsh, where Will of the Wisps lived. Still, she could not believe Puck was truly the horrible trickster the adults feared. Maybe everyone was wrong about him. Despite her doubts, she never returned to the swamp until the fateful night 9 years later, when she was forced to break the rules again. The night her whole world was destroyed.
Rosen! Nora, wake up! Soldiers are coming!
Enora started awake at the panicked voice of her father, Breek, but only partially registered his words. He was standing near the door of their hut, and her mother was in their bed.
Da? What's wrong?
The Romans are coming. No one knew they were this far west already. We need to leave now and warn the other villages.
Enora and Rosen dressed quickly as Breeg grabbed some food, tools, and pelts and blankets to keep them warm as they traveled. In mere minutes, they were ready to flee. But as soon as Breeg opened the door, he closed it again.
We're too late. They're here. We have to hide.
Enora dove under her bed, but before either her mother or father found a place to hide, the door banged open. Four men in strange metal shirts and hats came in.
Please, take whatever food you want. We don't want to fight you,
Enora heard her father say. The soldiers spoke to each other in a language Enora didn't understand. Then one of them said,
Barbarus!
Rosen screamed. Peering out from her hiding place, Enora saw her father's body collapse on the ground, blood pouring from the wound in his chest, and saturating the dirt floor. It was all Enora could do to keep from screaming herself, but she bit down on her hand and hoped her mother's cries were drowning out her own quiet sobbing as she watched her father gasp his final breath. The soldiers yelled at Rosen in their strange gibberish language. Then Enora heard a scuffle as her mother was dragged out of the house. Desperately, Enora longed to rush out and help her mother so they could escape together. But what could she, a slight 15-year-old girl, barely a woman grown, do against such men? So she lay there, staring at her father's white face and empty eyes. She did not know how long she lay under the bed, whether minutes or hours, listening to the screams of her friends and neighbors as the Romans went from hut to hut. Still, she couldn't move. She knew her father was dead, but some small part of her hoped it was a trick, that at any moment he would stir, and they could save her mother and run away together. What jolted her out of her trance was the smell of smoke. Enora was no stranger to smoke. The cook fire always left the hut smoky, and during the winter months, the smell was constant. But this was different. Instead of the light smell from a small, controlled fire, this was a thick and pungent reek, causing Enora's eyes to water and her throat to burn. She coughed as she wriggled out from under her bed. The air was thick around her. Just as she got to her feet, a flaming section of the thatched roof fell on her bed. She ran for the door. She knew the Romans might still be in the village, and if they saw her, they would try to capture or kill her. But maybe someone else had made it out. Maybe she could find them, and they could flee to another village. Enora opened the door. Every hut in the village was burning. If anyone was still alive, they must have already fled. She was alone. But not alone enough. Shouts in the strange language of the Romans rose in the night air, with one word in particular being shouted over and over again.
Striga! Striga! Striga!
For a moment, she despaired, knowing the soldiers would capture and enslave her, or maybe just kill her. Still, she ran from the soldiers and into the forest. She ran along the twisting path to the berry patch that she and her mother had visited so often in the past. The soldiers wouldn't go running into an unfamiliar forest at night to capture one girl, would they? The sound of booted feet crashing through the underbrush dashed that hope. There was only one hope left to her. The Fae. She had danced and played with many a fairy in this clearing over the years. Maybe they would remember her fondly and be willing to make a deal to protect her. She wasn't supposed to make bargains with the folk, but whatever they demanded in return for protection couldn't be worse than what the soldiers would do if they caught her, could it?
O folk of the Fae, I've come seeking help. Evil men chase me, intent on doing me harm. Will you accept some bargain in exchange for protection?
Enora whispered the words, hoping some fairy or another was close enough to hear her. She feared that if she spoke any louder, the soldiers crashing through the forest behind her would hear.
Help me, please. I'll do anything.
But none responded to her pleas. The sounds of soldiers were growing closer. She had to move on. As quietly as she could, Enora ran, pleading in whispers to the residents of the forest, keeping the soldiers at her back. Between the darkness, her terror, and the tears in her eyes, she lost the path and found herself in a part of the forest she didn't recognize. But the sounds of the soldiers remained steady behind her, and not one of the folk had answered her desperate entreaties. Still, she ran as best she could. After several minutes of groping through the trackless forest, the way ahead of Enora grew lighter. At first she thought it was a break in the canopy letting in moonlight, but as she rounded the wide trunk of an ancient yew tree, she saw that the light came from two small balls of flame dancing above the ground, one blue, and one red. They were the most beautiful things Enora had ever seen. Not a sunset, not a field of wildflowers, not even her mother's smile could compare. She wanted to watch them, touch them, even swallow them until their pale light shone through her skin. And Enora knew where she was. She was back at the marsh where Puck made his home. She took a step forward, only to have her right leg sink into the mud up to her mid-calf. Maybe Puck would help her. Those wisps were the first sign of the Fae she had seen all night, and he had said he was her friend. But she had promised her mother she would never come back to the marsh, never even speak about Puck again. If Ma's warnings were true, then Puck could do worse than kill me if he wished. But he didn't hurt me all those years ago, and I don't have time to backtrack and find a way around the marsh. I'm sorry, Ma, but this is a risk I have to take. Puck! It is your friend, Nora! I call to you in great need. I flee from evil men who wish me great harm. If you can, please help me escape their evil clutches. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, a familiar voice filled Enora's head. You never visited me again after that day. Now you come asking for my help? That is not a way a friend behaves. Enora winced. She had insulted Puck with her absence, and insulting a fairy was dangerous. Still, she had no other options but to ask him for help.
I'm sorry, Puck. I would have come, but my Ma made me promise never to come here again. But you're right. I have been a poor friend. I will do anything to make that up to you, but please help me.
Three things of my choosing you must give me if I am to help you. First, you must give me your trust. Enora hesitated only for a moment, considering her mother's stories of travelers fallen into ravines or mired in the marsh, led astray by Puck's wisps. Or worse, stories of the children who wandered into the forest, then emerged days later as elderly adults, babbling about some distant lands of magic and wonder. But Puck was her friend, trickster though he may be, and trusting him, even if it meant him tricking her, was the price of friendship.
Okay, I trust you.
The blue wisp alighted on the ground, about a pace to Enora's right.
Step on my lights. They will mark a safe passage into the marsh.
She pulled her right foot out of the mud and stepped on the blue light. The ground held beneath her foot. The red light came to rest on the ground in front of her. She stepped on it with her left foot. Enora continued into the marsh this way. When she stepped on one wisp, the other would rush out in front of her to mark the next step. She was tempted to test each spot before putting her weight on it, but that would show Puck that she didn't trust him. So she took each step with confidence, as if she were walking down a marked path in daylight. Every step held. Enora was about 30 paces into the marsh, when the area around her was suddenly bathed in torchlight. She turned to see 6 Roman soldiers standing near the edge of the marsh. They began yelling that word, Striga, at her again, and gesturing with their arms. Enora turned and hurried along the path made by the wisps, but after a dozen more steps, the path stopped.
It is time for the second thing. Give me your full name.
Enora heard squelching behind her, and turned to see that 2 of the soldiers had fallen face first into the marsh, and their companions were frantically trying to pull them out.
Give me your name. You won't do anything to me as bad as those soldiers, will you? You will be mine to do with as I please. That is the power of a name. You must trust that, as a friend, I wish you no harm. But I give no guarantees. Now, I say a third time, give me your name, else the bargain is void.
Enora took a deep breath and closed her eyes.
Enora Mordrill,
she breathed out in a whisper.
Ah, Enora Mordrill. Thank you. Now we will be friends forever.
The red wisp hovered before her eyes, then expanded to the size of a door. Enora reached out and touched the flames before jerking her hand back. The fire was pleasant and warm, just like when she had touched the wisp all those years ago.
When you step through my doorway, your life will be mine to do with as I please. It is the last thing I require of you. If you trust me, and take that step, you will have the escape I promised you.
Enora turned back to look at the soldiers. Despite the wisps no longer marking the way, the soldiers were slowly finding the safe path out to where she stood. With no other way out, Enora faced the door once more.
I'm sorry I never came back, Puck. I trust you. Please be kind to me.
She took a deep breath and stepped through the door of flame. Puck had Enora's name, and when she stepped into his doorway, he had complete power over her. He could have done anything to her. Dropped her in the middle of the ocean, transported her to another planet, or even taken her to the realm of the Fae, from which no mortal escapes. As long as she escaped the Romans, he would have lived up to his end of the bargain. That he did none of those things, that he was kind to her, spoke to just how much he wanted a friend.
Miss Mordrill? Miss Mordrill?
The sharp rap of a ruler on her desk next to her ear caused Enora to start awake. Her eyes darted around, afraid that the Roman soldiers had gotten her, until her eyes fell on her teacher. After a moment of confusion, she recovered.
What? Oh, sorry, Miss Brown. I don't know why I'm so tired.
Miss Brown's look seemed to hold a mixture of disapproval and concern, but she moved on to the lesson.
Yes, well, it is your turn. Please read the final line of the play.
Enora pushed her white hair out of her face and quickly flipped through her book to the last line of the play. She cleared her throat and read aloud.
If we shadows have offended, think but this, and all is mended. That you have but slumbered here, while these visions did appear.
Just like that, Enora's dream of fairies and small villages and Roman invaders faded from her mind, as so many bad dreams do. And if, as she and the other girls at the orphanage talked after class, she remained oblivious to the small blue light outside the window and the mud on her right shoe, we must forgive her, as youth everywhere share an inordinate preoccupation with whatever holds their interest in the moment. That is as true now as it was 2,000 years ago. As Enora settled into the bed that had been hers since she was 5 years old, the bed that she had never slept in before that night, her dreams were far more pleasant than the all-too-real nightmare of earlier that day. In them, she danced and played with a beautiful boy with pointy ears and blazing eyes. One blue and one red. Thank you for listening to A Trickster's Friendship. If you enjoyed this story, please subscribe to Wild Speculation on your preferred podcast provider and share it with any of your friends who also love speculative fiction. Also, be sure to follow me at facebook.com/wildspeculation for updates about the podcast and any other projects that I am working on. If you would like to help Wild Speculation continue to grow and improve, please consider supporting Wild Speculation at patreon.com/wildspeculation. If you are interested in other podcasts like Wild Speculation, consider checking out Dr. Gilvanic's Odd Tales.
Hello, podcast addicts and curious listeners. Dr. Galvanic's Odd Tales is a narrated podcast with dark, thrilling, and mysterious stories. In each episode, Dr. Galvanic's Odd Tales will take you through the mysteries of the Australian outback, lead you into a remote corner of the galaxy, or it will accompany you through a mind-bending nightmare. You can find Dr. Galvanic's Odd Tales on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Subscribe to the show so you won't miss another episode. See you out there.
Dr. Gilvanic's Odd Tales, Wild Speculation, and many other great podcasts are part of Project Entertainment Network. You can find them all at projectentertainmentnetwork.com. This has been Wild Speculation. Until next time, let your imagination run wild.